a year ago, September, early September, I met Julia. I was down the street picking some plants, and I saw this tiny little old lady shuffling down the street. We don't have sidewalks in the neighborhood, but we do have a few places that are like retirement homes for the elderly. So I first thought she was an escapee. She was nicely dressed, a sweater and slacks. And I smiled and waved, and she couldn't see me, but I got closer, hollered, and she kind of blinked and smiled. She still obviously couldn't see me. So I found out that she was fine, and she lived down the street. And she was very proud that she just turned 97 years old. And she was walking to a neighbor of mine to find out if the sun could come help trim. She was calling it a big tree or a bush that fell down. And I said, you know, do you mind if I walk with you? Because there was a pretty wide intersection that she had to cross. And I don't remember how much of her vision she had, but, you know, she could see her feet. You know, so she was very careful when she walked, looked down at her feet, and her hearing was, you had to yell, and you had to yell in the right ear. She told me that she used to play accordion. I don't remember how we got on that topic. And she was obviously quite lucid. We went to the neighbors. She had a note to leave. She wanted the sun to come trim the bush. And as we walked back, I said, well, I've got my loppers right here. Let me come down and I'll see what I can do. So I grabbed my loppers. We went back to her place. And it was just a big geranium that had fallen over in the wind. So I trimmed that for her. And she went and she got her rake. And she was raking up the branches. And she would bend over, just pick up things off the ground. And she didn't have green waste, so she had just a regular trash can. So I went down and got a neighbor's that I knew wasn't using his and brought that back to fill up her can. And as we talked, she said that her son had been living there with her off and on. He had just turned 65. He was an alcoholic and had been taking things from her. And had been yelling at her, you know, which was upsetting to me. And I talked to her about tough love, and she was aware of tough love. And even though she didn't want him living there, she worried about what's he going to do. So the next morning, and she insisted on paying me $10 for my work. And I could tell that she took pride in being able to pay her own way. So I accepted the money. The next morning, she showed up at my house. I don't know how she remembered which house it was, but she did. And she wanted to give me more money for the green waste bin, you know, which I said it wasn't costing me or anybody anything. And it was all taken care of. And she was on her way, almost a mile away, to the fire station to report her son because he had an outside entrance to the house, but the hallway door he had blocked. And she was afraid, because he smoked, that he was going to set the house on fire. So she wanted to talk to the police department about it, or the firemen. She did not want me to give her a ride. I absolutely insisted on it. And she wouldn't let me buckle her in. She did it herself. She's very proud of her independence. So I took her to the fire station, as I figured they couldn't do anything, and said to go to the police department. So I took her there to the sheriff's station. And I waited while she gave her report. And I'm a reporter, so I had my notebook, and I took lots and lots of notes. As you know, she had her daughter's number memorized. Her daughter was 79. Can you imagine having a 79-year-old daughter who lived in Nevada? But she had her phone number memorized. She had her son's cell phone memorized. She was very sharp, really, really good memory. And she told the deputy about the things the son had been stealing from her, which didn't make sense to him. Why would he steal her shears? And he had stolen some of her jewelry and some clothing. It took a few weeks, but once I figured out who the guy was, I understood why he had stolen those things, because he was living in the bushes over by the library with all the other homeless guys, and he was using the clippers to, you know, trim up the area. And there was a crazy homeless woman who was staying there with the guys, and so that's what the clothing and the jewelry was for. But in the meantime, I contacted the daughter. I stayed in close touch with the sheriff deputy, and I contacted the daughter to let her know that I had befriended Julia, and that Julia insisted on paying me for things, and was it okay? And she also insisted on taking me out for lunch if I took her to Ralph's to do her banking and that sort of thing. The daughter assured me that she had enough money and that it gave her a lot of pleasure. So over a period of a couple of months, I helped her out with a number of tasks. I went out to lunch with her. She loved to laugh, and it's a little hard to get someone to laugh when you have to yell your jokes, but we worked things out. I had to take her to San Luis one day to exchange a space heater, and she said it was one of those new stores, those new department stores. Well, it was Bed Bath and Beyond. And to her, it was still new. And I said, "We call that Bad Breath and Beyond." She loved that. And then I said, "Or we call it Blood Bath and Beyond." That really cracked her up. So she was a lot of fun. And I'd tease her about different things. She would be in a restaurant and she'd say, "I don't want Mexican food. I'm not Mexican." And I'd say, "Yeah." I said, "You're not Chinese either, but you like Chinese food." So I could kid her. And she was from Brooklyn. So she's a sweet little old lady, and she's a very devoted Christian, but she had a real tough way of talking because she was from Brooklyn. And when I first saw her house, she said, "Yeah, I just had it painted. Cost me $1,000. It sounded really tough. She only took a couple of types of meds, but then she got an infection. And so she had to take some in the morning, and she couldn't tell them apart. And the son was supposed to be coming over and giving her the medication, but he couldn't always show up. So I would go over every day, and I would sort them out so she would know what to take when. And I never did encounter him. Finally, the daughter got Wilshire Healthcare in on everything, and which is what hospice has become. Even though Julie wasn't dying, there's a separate social service part of Wilshire. And I was there when the social worker from the county came out. I was there, and I was put first on the list as the first contact. And then when Wilshire got involved, they immediately contacted me, and I had all information. I had more information than anybody else did because I'd been writing it down. So I could give them everything I knew about the situation. One social worker said that she had a device that she got at Radio Shack that cost like $20, and it worked really fabulous for people that were hard of hearing. And that Julia had given me the okay to buy that and be reimbursed. And I was there the day that the head of Wilshire, or this particular aspect of it, was there. And we tried it out. And she said, "You don't have to yell. I can hear you." So, you know, it worked. And then I'd stop by sometimes just to see if she was okay. She'd left her door unlocked. I'd go into her room and, you know, kiss her on the head when she was already in bed. And I'm not a caregiver by nature, but this all sort of happened. One night I went over and she was moaning. She had gone outside. She had fallen down. She was sneaking her trash. That's why she didn't have trash service, because she'd sneak it to everybody else's in the neighborhood. And she fell down. She hurt her head. I put ice on it. The ambulance showed up. I got to really hurry and make this story short, don't I? I went with her to the hospital. The next day, her new caregiver was there, and Julia was complaining about her wrist, and so decided to call the ambulance again. And the caregiver said she's expecting her Meals on Wheels, so will you stay here until that comes? So I waited. It arrived. I put it in a cooler. I went to the hospital. The caregiver would not speak to me once I got to the hospital. She would not speak to me. She said she'd been told. Finally, she said the family had told her not to have anything to do with me. I got home. I got a call from the police department, from the sheriff, saying that he got a report that about stolen Meals on Wheels. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever eaten Meals on Wheels food. It's nothing you want to get arrested for stealing. It's nothing you want to ruin your reputation about. And then, you know, so I told the guy what happened. Oh, and also the hearing device, because I'd picked that up to take it to the hospital too, which at that point legally still was mine because I had not been reimbursed for it. And then the next day, I went over there to help her out with something. And I saw the caregiver's car go by. She wasn't supposed to be there. She must have called the granddaughter. The granddaughter said to report me. So I got another visit from the police department. And what are you doing? I said, I'm taking out her trash. What's that you have in your hands? It was my notebook. So this is getting ridiculous. I spoke to the captain of the substation. And he said, you know, you're better off just staying away. I know you care about her, but you should just stay away. Usually there's reasons that things happen in life. I could never figure out what was going on with the situation. I know the caregiver felt threatened by me in some aspect. But I had a bumper sticker on my car for a few years. It's one of my favorite mottos. But I decided it was becoming a self-fulfilled prophecy. So I removed it. And what it was is, no good deed goes unpunished.